It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. In this special edition of Fix SA, we're going to look at the Herculean task facing the new administration post this week's election. Now, it is important to note that we are recording this before the Wednesday poll, but whatever the outcome, whatever the timeline, the big issues remain in terms of resetting the national dial. Professor Adrian Saville has over 25 years of experience in capital markets and investment management, and is a professor of economics and finance at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And he's also developed in time, as well as authoring, innovative tools that measure and monitor economic integration, economic performance, investment impact, and a firm strategy across markets. So I can think of no one better to talk about South Africa in this election time. Adrian, a very warm welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. What do you think this post-election landscape is going to look like?
Well, it's hard to escape the conclusion that it's likely to be more fragmented than any other time that we've had in South Africa's democratic era. And, you know, let me first preface that by saying I'm not a political analyst. So I'll give you an economist or a strategist view on, you know, what I think the outcome is likely to be. And it's hard to imagine that the ANC won't have arrived at the end of the week with their lowest support base that we have since 1994. And, you know, that will mean others have taken share of that portion. I'm not quite sure who will get the lion's share of the parts that the ANC will have lost. And unfortunately, you know, that's going to translate into a much more fragmented economic landscape. Fragmented economic outcomes tend to translate into poorer economic performance. And that's one thing that South Africa just simply cannot afford, is more of the same or even worse, given how weak and anemic the growth trajectory has been over the last decade, even two decades.
Adrian, whether it's a coalition cabinet that is sitting around a table, whether it is the African National Congress there with a slim minority, one way or another, they are going to have to look at what the top economic priorities are for the country 2024 and going beyond. Where do you think the starting point is in terms of fixing things? And how difficult is it going to be to inject any kind of new momentum into what is a very moribund situation at the moment anyway?
And so if I could go backwards through your question, you know, injecting that new momentum really requires, you know, firm, strong leadership with a clear sense of purpose and a commitment to getting things done, regardless of the hurdles or the obstacles. And unfortunately, the, you know, the party that we've had in recent times has been, in my mind, directionless, and that they have just lacked that commitment, squaring up to some of the deepest problems that face South Africa, unemployment and inequality. And I would venture that one of the reasons why the ruling party has battled with that commitment to purpose and, you know, the conviction in their direction is it's a coalition government that we have already. And a lot of people are doing hand-wringing about what will coalition look like. Well, I don't think we need to look too far. We've had coalition for a long time where the ruling party is made up of an aggregation of the ANC, the Youth League, Women's Movement, COSATU, and the SACP. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, my suspicion is that we're going to get more of the same or possibly even worse. But that doesn't change the starting point of your question. What do we need?
I'm interested in your use of the phrase sense of purpose, whether it's a political party or a political construct or whether it's a company. How does an organization go about developing, do you think, a sense of purpose in order to start moving forward?
I think that's a great question. I think a sense of purpose is shaped by at least two things. You know, the one is a commitment to solving something. You know, that gives you purpose, that there is a challenge or something to be solved or something to be addressed. That gives you buy-in or purpose or conviction. But the second is understanding the nature of the problem. You know, what is it? And I like your reference to business. You know, some of the most successful entrepreneurs are people who are solving problems, you know, and they are trying to figure out what's the thing that is annoying, irritating, holding people back the most. What would be, you know, their great springboard? Some of the most inspiring and impactful entrepreneurial endeavors come from that type of understanding of, you know, what's the pain point. And the pain point for South Africa, it's, you know, I just can't see how there could be any other conclusion than the pain points are for South Africa is a cocktail of unemployment, inequality, and crime. And the solution in that is achieving inclusive and transformative economic growth.
Adrian, I interviewed you in September last year. And in that interview, you mentioned Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's 150-day plan in Liberia. I'm sure you remember that.
I mean, she's aspirational.
But you can't fix anything unless you have a plan. And I guess what she does is she also stuck to it. It's about having specific short-term projects, perhaps. If you were to look at it from that approach, are there ideas or concepts that should be prioritized to kickstart economic and social improvement?
Jeremy, you know, we know what needs to be done. And to me, that's the most frustrating part is we have really impressive policy. Not everywhere. You know, some places we've got a policy that I would put a big question mark over. But, you know, for the most part, I would say that the policies that we've got in place are sensible, they're wise, they're informed, and if only we could get them to result or transpire into the intended outcome. So something's missing between the intention and the outcome. And that's exactly what Ellen Johnson Sirleaf pointed to. She said, I can offer you a 10 or 20 year plan, but the only way that you get to that 10 or 20 year outcome is by starting with immediate steps. And she put in place her 150-day plan. And whoever, you know, our leadership is after May 29, that would be one of my greatest wishes is that they could, you know, make it clear what the plan is. And over 150 days, you can't escape the accountability. You've made it clear what you're setting out to do. And this doesn't have to be, you know, in the next 150 days, I'm going to solve unemployment. That's impossible. But it starts to move the flywheel if you can evidence or demonstrate even small victories. And that would start to give this country an important sense of direction in what is very much a listless landscape and lost hope.
What do you think would signify a small victory that could have big impact?
We're surrounded by these types of potential wins. And if I could go to Ellen Johnson Sirleaf as the case in point, I'd forgotten we had spoken about it. So thank you for reminding me. But putting potable water and, you know, fixing water leaks, repairing roads, getting parts of the grid, you know, up and running. I'm not sure what day we're on now, day 60 something. If this is being generated by diesel, we should know. If this is truly a result of improved performance, we should be singing this from the rooftops. You know, those types of things will start to move sentiment and with that shift direction in our economic performance.
Adrian, it's common cause that in one way or another, small business and the development thereof is going to play a significant role in boosting the economy and therefore fixing South Africa.
Yeah.
Just before this conversation, I had a very interesting discussion with a young man who has started a coffee kiosk in Sandton. And essentially, he had a vision. He knew nothing about coffee, but he figured that this was going to be a way in which he could make money. And he started the business, and he's actually succeeding. He is employing a person who he is now paying a salary to. He's got a long way to go. I asked him what the two impediments were. One is he needed help and encouragement from bigger business. And second of all, people to stop, or authorities to stop harassing him for little things like permits. Let him get on with the job. Those two things to me struck as a metaphor for what is wrong with this kickstarting, the flywheel example that you use of small business in South Africa. How do we overcome that kind of obstacle, do you think?
You know, so first, just an observation, Jeremy, that I agree with you. Big business might be an important big business is an absolutely vital ingredient into getting this right. So is labor and so is government. You know, so those are all necessary components. But to achieve inclusive growth, that's going to come from micro enterprises, which become small enterprises, which eventually grow up to become mid-sized enterprises. There's a glaring gap in South Africa in that regard. We simply don't create small and mid-sized businesses. That's an important part of the fix. And you flagged two points, which I think are really important. The first is, you know, on the ease of doing business. If we rewind 10 years, South Africa ranked something like 30th in the world in ease of doing business. We were a sought-after destination where it was possible to get things done. At the last measure, South Africa had moved to something like 82nd in the world, and it's no longer ease of doing business, it's difficulty of doing business, which your interview before this would have referenced. But the second point is there's so much potential in partnership. And in the Center for African Management and Markets that I look after at Gibbs, we've partnered with Aspen Pharmacare and with DHL Express. And what each of them has offered is in a challenge for small business is a route to market challenge. The outcome is that they will help businesses find partnership in building off their bases or their platforms. Those are powerful drivers for small businesses.
Adrian, I've spoken to chief executives who would publicly agree with you. Privately, they have said to me, yeah, but it's not worth the trouble. It's just too much effort. And that in itself is a bridge that has to be forged.
Yeah, you know, I find that very discouraging. And, you know, I understand the cynicism or the reservations, but If you don't fix these things, the country goes into an increasingly worse place. And, you know, my message to business would be the single biggest risk that you face is evaporation of the country. No country, no company.
As simple as that. I mean, and often you've got to be smacked around the side of the face before you realize it, or you've got to suffer some kind of incremental loss. And maybe a lot of people aren't seeing that. Adrian, what about the manufacturing sector in South Africa and it being strengthened? Surely you get that right. It's a jobs enabler, but it is also perhaps easier than some of the big heavy industry, which is, got a different agenda completely.
From a manufacturing perspective, South Africa faces real structural headwinds. One of them is just our distance to market, that if South Africa ever wants to be, you know, a producer at scale, the immediate neighborhood, you know, whilst it's getting better and better, Sub-Saharan and Southern Africa are fast-growing regions. They are very, very small markets. So if you want to produce at scale for the global market, you've got a big transport obstacle. And that then sort of takes us into the localization debate. Is there a prospect for South Africa to build viable local industry? And I would argue that there's a strong case to be made here. If we look at the successes of the Southeast Asian nations, where drawing on what's referred to as the flying geese principle, you figure out how to manufacture one thing well, and after that, there are spillovers and connections and linkages that then create neighborhood industries or neighborhoods in the cluster. there certainly is a case to be made for this. But for all of that to work, South Africa has to go back to the basics and provide industry with reliable energy and reliable transport infrastructure.
And that's my next question, is about the logistical difficulties that we have. Unless Transnet is upweighted quickly in terms of acquisition, in terms of improving the rail network, none of this is going to happen. The entire economy, it seems to me, is dependent on an organization that is almost over its own fiscal cliff.
Yeah, no, you know, all of those network industries. So it's easy to, you know, single out Eskom or Transnet. It's, you know, it's easy to single them out, but I think that's putting too sharp a point on it. All of the network industries are essential, from telecommunications to finance, water, electricity, and transport. All of these are absolutely critical to the healthy functioning, or to the functioning of a healthy economy. And unfortunately, you know, in South Africa, we've got these two of these really important industries are in deep, deep trouble. Now, it would seem that Eskom is on the road to repair, and you know, I'm looking for wood to touch, you know, that please, you know, may that go from my lips to God's ears. It would seem to be that case. And if that is the case, then what a fantastic way for Transnet to also achieve quick turnaround, important turnaround in quick time. Because if this has come to pass, then it is the result of partnership between the public and private sector. And not for one moment am I suggesting that, you see, the private sector's help, therefore the public sector has got it right. It is the partnership of the public and private that is critical.
Adrian, as we come to the end of this conversation, let's move from the practical to the philosophical, if we can. If I said to you that there was a new ministry in South Africa, and it was the Ministry of Fixing Things, and you had been appointed as the Minister of Fix in South Africa, I've got two questions. What would your absolute starting point be on day one? You're moving into that office today. And secondly, who would you call in to help you?
Wow.
And congratulations, by the way, on getting the job.
What an incredible privilege to be appointed to that job, and what a daunting and terrifying task. You know, I think that there would be, so first, you know, what would my critical move be? It would be to remove the red tape that's in the way, that South Africa has created so many, or scored so many own goals. And much of that can be achieved with the stroke of a pen. You don't require, you know, huge investment amounts. You need to get these principles passed or agreed. You know, you need to get that through the legislature. But that's almost costless, and it's a huge win-win outcome. You'd get a faster-growing economy. You'd get the creation of new businesses. And that would be the thing that I would go for first. Who would I call in? There are lots of people with acres of experience in this country, but I would call in people who know how to solve a problem with analytical minds. I'd call on the engineers to come and help us fix this. They know how to get stuff done.
Adrian, you're an analytical guy. That's your area of expertise. But again, philosophically, you've outlined problems to me, and none of them are particularly new. We're all aware of them. You've given us a different take on them. You've given us some good suggestions in terms of how to fix things. Going forward, though, do you have a modicum of optimism? Do you think that we are still in a position where we can save the country? Because again, I refer you to our interview that we had in December last year, where you suggested to me that we might already be over that proverbial fiscal cliff. Do you think that do you still have a modicum of hope here?
If I didn't have hope, then, you know, this would be a fool's errand, you know, trying to bring solutions to fix a very, very troubled place. The fact that we are over the cliff in so many ways, we've overspent, we've got an overbloated government, we've got overly concentrated industries with a small number of large firms, we've got this bloated unemployment making social wage bill promises that we simply can't afford. And in so many ways, South Africa, you know, has just lost its way. and I won't use the word that so many keep reaching for, you know, the COVID word of resilience. I won't go for that word because I'm also done with resilience. I don't want to be resilient for another year.
I'm tired of being resilient. You're right.
Yeah. Like, I'm done with being resilient. Can we get on with repair? And to me, you know, the leadership that is in place post 29 May, if they don't get that between their teeth, then unfortunately I'm going to have to sort of resign myself to, you know, well, good luck, you know, enjoy the directionlessness, and I hope it works out well for you. But please may this not be a soundbite that you play back to me. Let's hope that this is a call to action.
Professor Adrian Saville, thank you so much for your insights. I do appreciate it on this edition of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.